Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist years as your chief encourager and host of the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes if you have enjoyed listening to this podcast so far. And check out switchpivotorquit.com for even more personal and professional development resources. But for now, just sit back, open your mind, and enjoy the show. On today's show, we're chatting with Kiana Murray. Kiana Murray is an award-winning entrepreneur, motivational speaker, and sponsorship strategist. As one of the foremost inspirational business experts, Kiana shares her amazing story of overcoming seemingly insurmountable challenges to build the business of her dreams. Her powerful message, mixed with her personable style and practical action steps, ignite audiences to action. Kiana's passion for empowering others sets her apart from the rest and has garnered speaking requests from corporate organizations and women's groups around the world. Look, if you are looking for sponsorship for anything that you're doing, if you're looking to get the insight on that world, this chat with Kiana was so insightful. We got into the nitty-gritty of things. We broke it down. I asked her questions that I thought you would really want to know. There is no skating over the details in this episode. So grab your pen and your paper because I am sure that you will need it. And if you are looking to take your business or your presence to the next level with sponsorship, you're gonna go from breaking even to bankrolled when you listen to this episode with Kiana. Strap in and get ready. Welcome to the show, Kiana. So excited to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Ayana. I'm happy to be here.
Yay! So we are going to jump all into breaking even, going from breaking even to bankrolled. And Kiana, you are an expert in this space and you have a lot of experience with it. But before we jump right in to getting our bankroll on, I want to have you share with us briefly a little bit about your personal switch, pivot, or quit story.
Sure. Oh my goodness. So a lot of what I do is based on exactly that. When I first decided that I wanted to work for myself, I quit my job, went home and told my husband at the time we had twin infants that, hey, I quit my job and I'm going to work for myself. Oh. Now, he was self-employed, but, you know, that because I was employed, that meant that, you know, oh, yeah, there's things called healthcare. Oh yeah. You know, all these things that I took for granted.
Right.
And so, girl, that business flopped like a lead balloon.
Really? And how many years ago was this?
This was back, oh my gosh, this was 11 years ago.
Okay. Okay.
And I had always done consulting, for decades, but, I always did it with the safety net of having a full-time job.
Right.
And so, yeah, when that business flopped, it was like, you know, you go through a lot of emotions because you think, okay, how is this possible? You know, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You know, how come people aren't just showing up, lining up to work with me, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it really set us on a course that really like spiraled everything downhill because, again, I hadn't planned. So I just jumped out there and because I hadn't planned, I hadn't thought about so many things. And then, you know, to make a long story short, a few months later, while I was still struggling to try to, you know, get this business going, we had a house fire. And that meant that my family was living in a hotel at that point. No, a motel. Let's get straight.
Really?
You know, yes. And so, because what happened was when we had our boys, because we have twins, we decided that it was just going to be too expensive to do daycare. So my husband said, okay, look, I will, you know, slow down my business so that I can be home with them. And then, you know, whenever you have a contracting assignment or whatever, you know, you'll be home with them and we'll work that way. Well, because I had been out of the home in a job, that meant that he had put a lot of his business on hold. And this was before the whole, you know, time when people were like really internet marketing and things like that. So mm-hmm. business was happening face to face. And so long story short, you know, it was just like, I've got to do something else. This is, I cannot, you know, my family cannot be living in this motel and that, and, you know, and the like. And so what it did was it really put me on a course to stop doing what people expected of me and to start doing what worked for me. And because I was able to start doing the things that worked for me, to set up business around my family, as opposed to, you know, in conflict with my family, you know, it really has been an amazing experience for me.
And so what, just so we have a bit of background, what type of business was that first business that you embarked on that didn't work out so well?
I was doing coaching for busy moms. The thing was, you know, this is something that I always tell people. Just because people say they want something doesn't mean that they're willing to invest in it.
Well, now I think you just hit on something very early on. That is so true. That's so true. And think about how many times we've all said that. We've said, oh, they should make this, or if there was this. But if it was really there and it really existed, does that necessarily mean that you would spend your money on it?
I'm telling you.
And so you had to learn that the hard way by creating this business, and then people were not buying into it. So you're very candid about your journey. And I want to know, in your opinion, why do you think this first business failed?
Honestly, it was because I didn't do enough research. This was a brand new, you know, coaching was still in its infancy back then, you know, as it is called today, you know? And so I didn't set up any systems. I didn't even have an email list provider. I didn't have any of these things set up. I just kind of thought that when I said, hey, y'all want this, here I am.
They would come.
And, you know, that just really, you know, and I was working in a space where people were still reluctant to even pay for things online. You know, this was like around when business online was kind of like being born. Right. And so people did not trust putting their credit card in an order form. You know, I mean, these were very real things that I didn't think anything about, because I was okay doing that. So I assumed everybody was. You know, I didn't look at what the needs of the industry and the needs of the client were. I looked at it from a, this is what you told me, I'm just going to go do it type of perspective. And that's why I said, you really have to set up your business in a way that works for you. And not only that, but in a way that is going to work for you and support and attract the people that you want to be in your community.
Right. And I'm glad that you touched on that, because even though someone may be listening thinking, oh, those were the problems of yesteryear, we don't have to worry about that now. People are comfortable with putting their credit card information into a web browser and clicking buy. But that is to say, be mindful of the things that still require a learning curve from your customer, though. There's still things that people are not comfortable with, and there's still ideas and concepts that people are not comfortable with. Let's just say, for example, coaching, you know, there's a lot of people out there offering coaching, and I've said this before, but some of them unfortunately don't have receipts. They cannot provide you the results that they say that they will. So then people have bad experiences, and then they are hesitant to sign up to work with someone else. So these are still real problems, and there's still a lot of hesitation in, let's say, the market. Now, many of our listeners, they currently have like a side hustle. They may have a full-time and they have a side hustle. And a lot of people that listen to this podcast are desperately trying to figure out ways to make that side hustle thrive so that they can have this sort of luxury of freedom. What's your advice to people looking to make their side hustle their main hustle?
Well, two things. First things first, really follow, connect with, and learn from people who are doing this full time, because there is this huge misconception that once you quit your job, even if you have a lot of clients, you're going to be able to live this laptop lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Well, a laptop lifestyle still requires some work going on in the back end.
Right.
So please don't fall in for the trap that, you know, once you're at that point, the work stops and you just going to live off right off into the sunset, you know,
right.
There's still going to be some work to be done. But then on the other side of that, I would say really make sure you have set up enough, set up an emergency fund. And I'm not just talking about finances. I'm talking about things like insurance and business insurance. You know, this is something that's huge, especially when it comes to sponsorship. You know, a lot of people say, I want to get a sponsor. I want to do an event. You need insurance because they, you know, your sponsor is not going to be trying to pay if somebody sues you for $1 million because they tripped on a bead at your lavish event.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, there's that. And then also in addition to that, you want to look at things like your own personal insurance and healthcare. You want to look at things like, you know, how do you need a physical location? Because at the end of the day, some businesses, no matter how much you promote and perform online, there are going to be some clients that may want to actually be face to face with you.
Right.
And so, you know, especially when it comes to sponsorship, you may be having to travel, you know, to a whole different city to meet with someone face to face. Well, if you laptoping, you know, your way through life, mm-hmm. are you going to be able to do that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so really when you think about setting up your emergency fund, don't just think about financially, think about every aspect that you can think of and then think about it some more, because truly the more you have in place and the more that you know you have things in the background that are going to be working, even if everything goes wrong, the better you are going to sleep at night and the more likely that you'll stay in that business instead of just closing shop and deciding to just go get a job again.
So, okay, as we ease into this going from break even to bankroll situation, what are some of the initial questions that someone should be asking themselves if they're looking to gain sponsorship?
Well, the first thing definitely you want to do is you want to realistically look at what your community is into, because a lot of times, and it's the same as when you're starting a business. You want to do your market research. You know, are people buying from you? You know, are people attending the events, even if they're virtual events that you're hosting? Mm-hmm. Are people, you know, putting their time and energy and money into whatever it is you're doing in your business? Because here's the thing, sponsors are going to be interested in those things that people are already buying and participating in with you. So, you know, even if you're trying to create something new, you know, you need to be able to show a track record of something else in your business that has been successful. Mm. And so that's the first thing. So you need to ask yourself those questions, you know, like, what are those things, you know, that people are buying from me? Then from there, you want to ask yourself, do you have the time and the energy to commit to really creating a wonderful experience for your sponsors? Because here's the thing, it can be very tiring if you are supporting your community and then at the same time trying to facilitate a relationship between your community and your sponsors. So, you know, do you even feel like it? Like, I always say, do you even feel like it?
Right, because the money sounds good, but we also have to be mindful that with the money comes responsibility and accountability to this sponsor. So there's expectation on their end. There's deliverables, I'm sure. So you need to figure out realistically what those are, and do you have the capacity to fulfill?
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly, Ayana, exactly. Okay. And then from there, then you need to start asking yourself how or when you want to start building those relationships with your potential sponsors, because it really is a relationship.
Right. I was going to ask you about that as well in terms of the relationship building. What is sort of your opinion on the role that the relationship plays, and how should people go about sort of like starting those relationships? Because I know I've heard before, you know, asking a sponsor for money unsolicited with no relationship is just like somebody coming up to you and asking you, can I borrow $20? And they're a stranger. And you're like, no. And I know that, and I get that, and that makes sense. But for the, there's a lot of people on social media that show you that they're working with sponsors. Now, you have no way of knowing what the back end of that relationship looks like. They may be getting just comped trips or things like that. They may be getting comped products. They may be actually getting paid. You don't know what it looks like. But if you're a person that is looking to get paid from a sponsorship situation or relationship, what do you feel like some of the early things need to be, or how do people even go about establishing relationships? Because I'm going to guess that you're going to say relationships do matter in getting a let's say a sponsor of significant monetary value. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, the first step is just to reach out to someone. Here's the thing. Sponsorship, the people who are the decision makers, they're also human beings too.
Right.
And people don't want to feel like, you know, you're coming at them, like you said, you know, hey, give me $20. You know, what you can do is you can just start with a conversation, you know, hey, can I take you to lunch if they're in your city? You know, hey, can I take you to lunch? Or, you know, do you mind if we hop on the phone? I have some ideas and I would just like to get your input, you know, if this is even something that, you know, whatever their company is, would even be interested in. And, you know, because here's the thing, you inviting them to lunch or you inviting them to get coffee or something like that, that while yes, they are giving you a time investment, the financial investment is yours. So that tells them that you're at least in there. You know, you're at least putting something in, a dog in that fight, if that makes
sense. Right. You're willing to invest in your own business. So
exactly,
it makes them more open to invest in you.
Exactly. And then when you finally do get that, you just talk to them, you know, look, what are the things that you guys are working on that you can disclose at this point? Where are you looking, you know, to grow your following, your brand loyalty, whatever that thing is, you know, what are they looking for? Also, you know, what products and services, here's what my community looks like. What products and services do you even think I should be promoting to them of yours? I mean, things like that, that are so them specific and their corporation specific that it, you get everything that you need to then go back and craft a proposal or a pitch that's going to actually fit what it is that they're looking for. Because see, a lot of times the problem isn't that what you're doing is what you are pitching is wrong. It's just, it may be wrong for that corporation. So once you get that relationship going and you start asking these questions and be upfront, you know, look, at the end of the day, I am doing XYZ and we're going to be pitching sponsors. And I would just love to learn from you first. What is it that you need from your potential sponsees? Mm-hmm. Nobody asked that.
Right. That's key right there. So make sure that you're asking what they are looking for in sponsorship relationships and people that they sponsor. Now, I know that somebody's going to be listening and saying, okay, so it's great. Now I know how to approach these people, but where do I find these people? How do I even begin that if I'm completely novice with this and I don't? See, for me, sponsorship is still like a kind of thing, but I do come from the world of PR, so I understand more so the pitching element of it.
Right.
But I know that there's a lot of people out there who this is just not their world. So they're wondering, where do I even start to try and find this person that I can ask to take out to lunch?
Let me tell you, there is so much available now that wasn't before. It used to be that, remember the days you had to actually pick up a phone and call, you know, the main line for the whoever of what, you know?
Yeah. It,
those days are gone. Now you have things like LinkedIn. You can just go to LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. You can just plug and literally type in a company's name and look at all the people and think about it. You know, I always say, don't be so tunnel vision with your own industry that you don't see what's going on in other industries.
Yeah.
Think about how that works, you know, and it's going to be different. At some companies, you know, you have a, and HR is an example that I use all the time. At some companies, HR means recruiting. It means hiring. It means, you know, any kind of disputes. It means all training. But at other companies, there's a different person for each one of those roles.
Right.
So the bottom line is what you want to do is you want to look at, first of all, to even decide what company to pitch, you need to be looking at your community. What are the things they're ranting and raving about? What do they love? You mm-hmm. know, what things can't they stand? You know, because mm-hmm. that's going to start you there. Like if you are working with a community and you know your community is absolutely loyal to mid-sized sedans, you're not going to be heading to a Tesla. You're not going to be talking to a Corvette type of company.
Right.
You see where I'm going with this?
Right.
So you're going to be looking at what is it that they are already doing? Mm-hmm. And then from there, how can I get that company? How can I create a meaningful connection between that company and my community? And so then that right there solves the who, you know, and then when it comes down to it, so now you know what companies, then all you have to do is go on LinkedIn and see who works there. You mm-hmm. may even know someone who knows someone. You know, mm-hmm. that's the wonderful thing about LinkedIn because it tells you how many connections you are apart.
Right.
And so then you just send, you know, you can send an email. Now, what you don't want to do is spam people, but you can just say, hey, you know, I was really thinking about I'm doing this XYZ and I was really thinking about how I can create a meaningful, you know, relationship between your brand and my community. Can I take you to lunch? And then, you know, it's so it all happens really, really quickly once you decide who you're going to be. And by who, I mean what corporations, because then it's going to list it there. It could be somebody in marketing that you find you connect to. It could be someone in another department. And then they can just refer you to the person that you really need to speak to. So mm-hmm. it really is just about stepping out there and first just making the connection, because if you're talking to the wrong person, they will definitely let you know.
Right, right, right. So a part of what I'm hearing you say too is that you need to pay attention to what brands would be what nicely align with your community and not necessarily what you would ideally want for your community to align with. So let's, like you said, maybe you want to work with Tesla, but you need to really be working with Ford because that's exactly. the community that you've now established. And I guess I'm also just having this thought too. If your ambition is to work with companies like Tesla, maybe more luxury brands, then that may mean that your strategy in terms of how you're building your community and your audience needs to be a bit different.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So those are things to think about. Make sure that it lines up, because if it doesn't make sense to you, then it won't make sense to the potential brand sponsor either, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And here's the thing, you know, and I always say that, you know, a lot of times when people get a no, or, you know, they just don't feel like they can just make that first move, it could be because somewhere you know that something's not really aligned. Mm. Because when you know that everything is lined up, then you don't, you know, yeah, fear may come up, but it won't be paralyzing fear. It'll be that fear that's just like, you know what, I'm just going to do this, whatever. You know, yeah. it allows you to keep moving forward. Right. But like you said, you know, you have to decide, you know, what's best for your community first, because that's your whole leverage. That is mm-hmm. your whole leverage with sponsors.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're entering this mindset of sort of going after sponsors and trying to make this a reality for yourself, what are some of the collateral or things that you think you should be prepared with? If, let's say, you get that meeting and there is some interest, then how do you need to be prepared to move forward?
I always say that first meeting, you do not go with a proposal because you don't have any information yet.
Mm-hmm. So, makes sense. You're getting information gathering at that point, right?
Yes. But believe it or not, a lot of people show up with this full proposal, but they don't really know what the company wants. So I would say that when you first start connecting, like that very first meeting, like you said, what you need to come with information about whatever it is you're getting sponsored. If it's an event, if it's a product, if it's a service, a program, you need to have information about that. And by information, I'm talking about how often does it run? How much does it cost the participants? You know, what is enrollment like? Is it rolling enrollment? Is it going to be based on a set interval? Those type of details. Then you need to know about your community, because you need to be able to know those people that you are serving inside and out to be able to say, you know, here's how come I think, like you said, Toyota is a great brand, mm-hmm. you know, or Ford is a great brand for them because they exhibit these XYZ qualities that you all also are talking about in your marketing. Mm-hmm. You know, so you need to be able to show them by and far how come, or the ways that your community is the perfect investment for them.
Right. So you come into that meeting, that first meeting, you're information gathering. You're just trying to find out the Absolutely. Lay of the land, what their goals are, what projects they may have coming up. Is there any potential for alignment with your brand? Then you gather all that information, you go back. Now you have sort of your foot in the door, and then you take that information and you turn it into a proposal. Is that the next step?
Well, you take that information back and you do a little bit more fact finding. Mm-hmm. And the way that you do this, this is when you kind of do your internet. I call it internet sleuthing. This is when you go and you look at a few of their recent press releases, things like that, because right. you need to know also is what it is they're focusing on for their marketing. Is it something that's already out there and they're just trying to get more people to buy it? Or is this something that they're developing? And so they're just trying to create enough buzz so that when they like open the cart, people are rushing in to buy. Right. So that's that kind of research you do there. And then from there, you can put together a really amazing proposal. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, you know everything that they're looking for. And you're basically just, it's like call and repeat. You know, they say something and then you put it in your proposal and say it right back to them.
Mm-hmm. Now, hearing the word proposal may intimidate a lot of people, and they may be listening to this thinking, okay, so now that sounds like a lot of work. Like, I don't right. even know where to begin with that. What are your thoughts on proposals and how maybe extensive they should be or simple they should be, and what types of things they should include to sort of get you to that next step?
Got it. So first and foremost, your proposal is going to be already pretty much done when you leave that meeting, because you already know exactly what they're looking for. Mm. So your proposal just needs to include what it is that they said they're looking for and a way that you can go about making it happen. So for example, the step one of it would be what they're looking for. They're telling you they're promoting this product. They are looking for brand loyalty. They plan to run a campaign of their own for XYZ amount of time. And they're looking to make XYZ either sales or some type of goal. Mm-hmm. And then so you have that already. So you just put that in there. Mm-hmm. And then the next part of that is how you're going to make it happen. Mm. And so how are you going to do this? Are you going to promote via traditional and digital media? Are you going to host a series of maybe webinars? Are you going to be doing an event that, you know, will, in addition to what that major thing is you're getting sponsored, are you going to be doing, what other things are you going to be doing to help them reach that goal?
Right.
And so by putting that in there and then putting what they're looking for, you're already going to be, I'm going to tell you, miles ahead of most people who complete and pitch sponsors. Mm. So you're going to be already miles ahead. Mm. Then the next thing you want to make sure you include in there is more information about your community. You know, what are their buying habits? What are the things that, you know, I always say those things that you only know sitting in a room with someone.
Right. Right.
And so put those in there, you know, and you don't have to give everything away, because here's the thing. They do not want your 50 page proposal. Nobody wants that.
Right.
You can do an amazing proposal sometimes in as little as 3 to 4 pages mm-hmm. and as much as maybe 20 pages. And that's, I'm talking like something really, you know, a very long-term sponsorship with huge dollars on the line.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, but by and large, you know, truly, once you know what it is they're looking for, you'll know how to put it together. Because remember, proposals come in different different forms. Truly, a proposal is a written, like, almost report-like document. And then you have a sponsorship deck. But people tend to use those interchangeably. And so does the industry, because, you know, some people may say, you know, I want a proposal. Some people may say, I want a deck. And if you're confused on what they want, just ask them. You got them right there. You can say, right. You know, here's, are you wanting this in presentation form or are you wanting this in report form? And they'll tell you. And so from there, you may find if they want it in report form, that you just write it up and you don't need someone else to do it for you. I know a lot of people say, I'm not a good writer. Oh my gosh. You know, I could never do that. Yes, you can, because the bottom line is you're literally giving back to them everything that they, that's why you take notes during the meeting, because you're giving back exactly what they put in there with your, how I can make it happen for you.
Right, right. And I was going to ask you what some people can do to get an edge up on the competition, but I think you pretty much just spelled it out by having those meetings, actually finding out what they want instead of guessing what they want.
Yes.
And then giving them a proposal that sort of breaks that down.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. That definitely makes sense. So when you're thinking of sponsorship right now, and someone is, especially because of the sort of like climate that we're in right now, and someone's thinking, you know, maybe I want to take the other route and I want to make myself more appealing to potential sponsors so that they'll come to me instead of me having to chase them. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or do you have any ideas as to how people can maybe make themselves more appealing to sponsors? Or maybe try and capture the attention of sponsors?
Sure. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. Unless
please
you
do.
Are Beyonce level, you know, Beyonce level influencer, you're probably not going to just randomly catch the eye of sponsors. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of corporations that do have whole departments set up to look and see who influencers are, because what we found is that influencer marketing is heads and tails higher in terms of return on investment than traditional marketing is. Mm-hmm. You know, commercials are no longer getting it. So, you know, because people are constantly bombarded with images. So now it's influencers who say, hey, look, you know, I went and got this lip gloss, you know, and now people are going to buy that lip gloss, you know.
Right, right.
But I will say this, you can be an influencer and not have millions of followers and still get sponsorship. Mm-hmm. The thing that is going to make you really stand out is going to be, one, your consistency. Mm-hmm. Having very little drama in your brand. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you definitely don't want to be, you know, put on blast for copying somebody's whole whatever, you know. And then also, you, of course, you know, and this is a no-brainer, you don't want to have any legal issues going on. Because mm-hmm. if you're being sued, they're not going to come near you.
Right.
So if you want to be attractive, you just really need to be consistent, and you really just need to put time and energy into building a following. And it doesn't just have to be a following online. You know, I have lots of clients who don't even do much social media. You know, they may put their flyers up and things like that, but they don't really engage online because they're doing events. Mm-hmm. So they have people in the room face to face, you know, so you just really need to be super clear on building engagement within your community, because remember, those people that you're building engagement with, whether they are business to business or whether you're business to consumer, they're going back somewhere telling somebody who has decision-making authority about you. So just really make sure, you know, your brand looks great online.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like that. And basically, you make sure your brand looks great online, but that does not mean that the only way that you can build these brand relationships is if you have a ton of followers.
Exactly.
Or if you're doing a ton online. Okay.
Exactly. Now,
a lot of us, and this, I want to touch on this for a second, value in our worth, because if you are in a position where brands are coming to you, whether you're a micro influencer or a macro influencer, mm-hmm. Why do you think so many of us undervalue our work or our worth and sell ourselves short? And what are your thoughts on asking for X amounts of money? And I just want to get some insight from you right. on what it sort of, what money looks like, because we've talked about what the process looks like now,
right.
but everybody wants to make money and make a living at the end of the day. So what does money look like in this space? Because I think there's, I know for a fact, actually, I have witnessed where some people have found out how much other people were making for similar projects or similar things. And they've been a bit devastated because they didn't even know that they could make that much.
Right.
So right. What are your thoughts on this whole money situation when it comes to working with brands and valuing yourself and sort of how to play that game?
First of all, you have to get comfortable with making money. And I know a lot of people, everybody says that I want to make money. I want to have money. I want to do this. But you know what? Do you really? Because there are a lot of people who are walking around with a lot of fear of making more money. They want to on the surface, right. but they don't, because they know if they make more than someone else, stuff is going to come up. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, if I make more than my spouse, it's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. If I have more money, if I make more money than my parents, it's going to be an issue. Mm-hmm. If I am the highest earner in my family, everybody going to want a piece of it. You know, so there's that aspect that is really just about getting past that limiting behavior. And everybody has different limits. Like, right. we all have it somewhere, but it's at different thresholds. You know, some people's limiting behavior is making more than $20,000 a year. Other people's limiting behavior is making more than $2 million a year. You know, it's different for everyone. So the first thing, you have to be really sure that you even want to make money. Because if you don't, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. You know, some people are minimalist. They don't have to make a lot of money. But if you really want to, you're going to have to look at all that stuff that comes up when you think about, if I really day to day had this much money sitting in an account or in my hand, what would that feel like?
Right.
But then also, because that's going to limit everything you do. That's going to limit whether you make the ask. You may do, I've had people who have done every step I've laid out, and then when it got to actually signing the contract, you couldn't find them.
Wow.
Because it was money, and money means responsibility too, to some people.
That's true. Know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they might not feel ready for that.
Exactly. Right? Because they want the money, and they even now have proven that they can get it, but they just don't want that responsibility. So they don't move forward. And then there's other people who, you know, they won't even make the ask. They'll do all this work up front, do the research, amazing proposal, and then won't make the ask. Because they're afraid of maybe rejection, or maybe they're afraid they'll get it. And what does that mean? You know, now that means that instead of me being maybe number three in my industry, now I'm number one. So now all eyes are on me, and I'm not comfortable with that. You see, so these are the things that, you know, and I always say, you know, a good strategist is going to need to know these things.
Right.
Upfront. You know, and that's why there's so much work behind the scenes when getting sponsorship, because you've got to also be cleaning up your stuff along the way so that by the time that check comes, you can take it happily and walk on over to the bank and cash it.
And understand what you're bringing to the table, and that they're actually going to get their money's worth and be confident.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And so do you think that there are any key steps to like communicating your value to a prospective sponsor?
The proof is in the pudding. And the best way to do that is to have a community that is engaged and raving about you, whether they're raving online or whether they're spreading it word of mouth. I really think that, and this is a good example of like what I call the Kendrick Lamar effect, where you just go ahead and you just go out there and you do what you're doing and don't worry about what other people are doing.
Right.
Because when you're doing what you're doing, guess what? You are focused on your community. You're focused on your business. You're focused on all these things. And so then when you finally get a chance to kind of look up, everybody is doing the work for you. They're marketing for you. They're promoting you. Brands are coming right at you. You get what I'm saying? So right. that really, the biggest thing is to create an amazing community and then be consistently engaging with them.
That makes sense. Speaking of community, we have the SPQ VIPs and quick insert, if everyone who's listening does not know, to become an SPQ VIP, all you have to do is text this phone number. It's plus one if you're international. And the phone number is area code 310-620-1514. When you text that number, you become an SPQ VIP, which gives you access to different things, but also engagement with me as your host. I send regular inspirational messages. I let you know when new episodes are coming. I let you know about great opportunities. And I also let you be involved in what's happening with Switch, Pivot, or Quit. And that is how this SPQ VIP question came about. I asked them, what kind of questions do you guys have for Kiana? And one of the SPQ VIPers wanted to know, what is the most common mistake that people make when seeking brand sponsorship?
The most common mistake is assuming you know what they want, what the sponsor wants.
Okay. That makes sense. Because then that is on the opposite side of everything that we just spent the last 20 minutes talking about.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Love it. Short and simple. I love it. So what is the current climate of corporate sponsorship look like and from your eyes? And have you seen any changes in the last few years? And that could be, I know that's a broad question, but that could be anything from how people work with sponsors offline to how people work with sponsors online to influencers in their role. I know you said that you guys have seen an increase in how influencers impact marketing versus just some of the traditional marketing tactics. Mm-hmm. But what's your overall thoughts on like the climate of corporate sponsorship?
Well, first of all, understand this. Sponsorship is a $64 billion with a B dollar industry year over year. And that's every single year. Okay.
Now, $64 billion industry with who making that money?
That's what sponsors are paying out.
That's what they're paying out. I see. Got it. Perfect.
Yes. Okay. So they're paying that out. Hmm. And every year there's an average of $2 billion additional being added.
Mm. So to people's budgets.
Yes. So okay. Sponsorship is becoming one of those recession-proof industries.
Wow. Interesting.
It is, because think about it. I mean, if you have a company, you need customers. And so traditional marketing isn't doing what it used to do in terms of getting people to be loyal to brands and things like that. So more money is being shifted into sponsoring smaller brands and companies and influencers like you, you know, because that's who's actually convincing people on the front line to buy. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first thing. So once you know that, then the next biggest thing I will say, or the biggest industry shift outside of whole influencer marketing and sponsoring influencers, is the idea that we need to keep this tiered sponsorship model. Let me tell you something. If you're having an event and you're working with smaller businesses, tiers may be great because they may not have sponsored before. They may, you know, not know what it is they don't know. So you telling them, hey, look, this is all that's available to you if you pay this certain amount of money, that'll be amazing. But by and large, larger corporations that are spending these billions and billions of dollars a year to sponsor, they are not trying to sit there and sift through your 10 benefits at each level. They don't want that. Give them a customized proposal, which you will now be able to do because you're going to talk to them before you even send them anything.
Right.
Give them a customized proposal that here's what you will get, and then start from there. Because you can always negotiate up, okay, well, if you would like this added benefit, that would be an impact of 10, 15, you know, extra $1,000 to be able to implement that within my community. You see what I'm saying? That is so much better than saying, hey, look, be silver, bronze, or platinum, and you decide. Because here's the thing, you know, you're talking to people who have billions of dollars to spend. You know what? Fine. I'll be bronze. You know, I mean, in their mind, it's no biggie.
Right. And they're probably considering these types of decisions all the time. If you're in the marketing department, you probably have all these different sponsorships and proposals coming your way daily. So your bronze package is the same as someone else's gold package. Who cares?
Exactly.
They don't care. They just want to know what the value is to them.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You hit the nail on the head, Ayana.
Exactly. So what should your business growth plan entail in terms of like, okay, sponsorship is one thing, but when you're thinking, and I'm sure you learned a lot since that first business, when you're thinking of the big picture of your business and that you want to start and create, what should that growth plan look like? And I know it's different for everybody, but if there's any like just sort of like common things that you can pull out, feel free to do so. Or if you want to talk about how sponsorship seems to be a lot of people's major and only source of revenue for their business, and maybe what your thoughts are on that.
Okay. So the biggest thing I will say is you definitely want diversification. Mm-hmm. Too many of us, and this is where I went wrong. Too many of us put all our eggs into the one-on-one or small group bucket. Mm-hmm. That was great when coaching first kind of came along. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, you know, some people like groups, some people just want one-on-one. But you also got to consider sponsorship. You need to consider things like advertising dollars, you know, because just because, you know, you may not be pursuing sponsorship right now, people should still be paying you to have access to your community, period. Mm-hmm. Period. So you definitely want to have advertising dollars. I would even say affiliate marketing, because here's the thing. If you are going to be promoting, you know, and everybody has their favorites. Let me say it this way. Everybody has their favorites. We all have our favorite technology pieces. We all have our favorite software, our favorite systems. And if you are constantly telling people about how much you love something, get paid to do it.
Right. Right.
So, you know, affiliate marketing and understand these things take time to implement. So please do not, you know, hang up from this podcast and then think that you're going to go and do all these things at one time. It's not going to happen.
Right.
But do what works for your business. And another thing that I would say is, you know, speaking is very good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just so many things, but the big things are truly just making sure that you are monetizing anything that involves some other corporation, some other business, some other influencer, because then that way, you know, if one decides to go away forever, all your money isn't chalked up into that. And right. Not only that, it keeps your time fluid, because that's another thing too. Time you can't get back. You can always make more money, but you cannot get back your time. And so the more things you can have working in the background, meaning the more diversification you have, the more you get to enjoy the time that you have.
Very true. Very true. Well, we could talk to you forever about sponsorship and just insight on all this. And you have so much knowledge. And I thank you for sharing everything that you shared thus far. I'm sure that there's a wealth of information that we can all take back and just kind of like figure out what our next steps are. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you being on the show, Kiana. I really, really appreciate it. And I want you to tell everyone how they can work with you if that is an option. I don't know if you offer that as an option, but how they can work with you, and if not, how they can just find you and keep up with you and sort of know what you have going on.
Awesome. Awesome. And thank you so much, Ayana. I feel so honored to be here.
You're welcome.
So what I've done, because I know sponsorship is a scary thing mm-hmm. to a lot of people. Right. What I've done is I've created a 5-day, it's free, mini course that kind of lets you dip your toe in sponsorship waters to see if it's even something you want to do. And basically it walks you through, in those 5 days, it walks you through a very simple sponsorship strategy. So this is like one of my more basic ones. And I give you all the resources you need. I give you a pitch script, all of those things. And so if you want to test the waters, you would go to, it's just sponsorshipminicourse.com. Like, that's it.
Sponsorshipminicourse.com.
Okay. Yes. And so there you can just kind of test the waters. And with that, you know, I have a free Facebook group that you can come on in if you have, you know, questions during the course, or you just want to get ideas from other people. Because in that group, there have been people who have gotten whole events sponsored just doing the mini course. Mm. So it wasn't designed for that, but I'm thrilled that they, you know, that they're getting that level of, you know,
in sponsorship.
So right. I'm happy. Right. And then if you want to follow me, I spend most of my time playing online on Facebook.
Okay. So Facebook is your space. Okay.
Yes. And I say playing because truly, it's so fun, you know, to engage with people in my community there. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, you know, if you go to Facebook, I'm just Kiana T with a T Murray. And that's my regular like profile. And my business page is just Facebook/Kiana Murray.
Nice, nice. And I'll make sure to link everything in the show notes section so you guys can just easily click on that and check that out as well. Thank you so much for your time, Kiana, and your insight and your information. All this knowledge has been, I'm grateful that you have been willing to share it with us. So thank you again.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
All right, you guys. As always, keep killing it.